Welcome back to another Facebook Live episode of Superhuman Radio. Server here in the studio is still not up. And so, unfortunately for me, I'm not able to run commercials. But fortunately for you, you get a commercial-free version of the Blueprint Power Hour today with my good friend, Coach Rob Regish. How you doing, Coach?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm sorry. Say that again, please.
Doing great. How about you?
Well, you saw the x-ray of my foot this morning. How do you think I'm doing?
Yeah, at least you got a diagnosis, right?
Yeah. It's a pretty ugly mess. I've got two terribly dislocated toes in the middle of my foot, and the right and my big toe has come out of the joint too now and is moving. But they can reconstruct it, so that's the good news. And the doctor said you'll be back to running and whatever you were doing before in no time. So,
how long were you like that?
August, April of 2016, it happened. So wow. Over 18 months, I've been living with that.
Jesus.
And it's painful. It's so painful. You know, but you know what? The good news is that it'll be over soon. That's the good news.
Good. Good.
You have any announcements we need to cover, Coach?
Yeah, just a friendly reminder. As for Synthogen, get your pre-orders in now while you still can. It is still sold out, but it's going to be first come, first serve when it does get back in stock. And Little Birdie told me they are expecting factory fresh Synthogen X2 that should start shipping out in a week or less, possibly as early as this Friday. So go to Synthogen.com, Synthogen, Synthogen.com to get your pre-order in, and you'll soon have it in your hands. And for certain people like me that are going to be out of it for a while, I can't wait to get it and start using it again.
Well, I told you I've been stealing Elisa's, right?
Yeah. Has she trained with it?
Yeah, she likes it. Okay. But she only takes three caps, and she says she feels it. Now, I'm not going to tell her, no, take more. Because then it's more for me.
Yeah, you know, I always tell people, start out with five before, five during, and five after, and then dial it back to 4-4-4, 3-3-3, until such time as you find your lowest effective dosing. That just makes good physiological and financial sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first question comes from Derek Benton. Derek says, so I heard about your box squat goal of 500 pounds. Can you elaborate on how you're going about this? I've just started training and would love to do that as well, but have no idea where to start.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important to remember first why I'm able to do this at all. I have had a glass back for the last 15 years, and thanks to bridging, it has given me my back. In fact, it feels as good as it did in my 20s. And little by little, I got away from the hip belt squat. I said, hey, let's try leverage squats. Once I was able to hit some big numbers with no pain on that, I got over and eyed the box squat and finally get the bar back on my back. So I began cautiously, very cautiously. You know, I was using just 250 for a triple to start. And thereafter, added just 10 pounds or so a week. You know, a very, very reasonable, easily doable progression standard. And that's just straight linear periodization, right? I ran that up until I hit 390 for a triple off of a parallel box, wearing only a belt, no knee wraps or anything like that. And at that point, I took a week off, came back in, singled, easy single with 405. Now I'm 95 pounds away from my goal. I then transitioned to using loading patterns for the last run to 500 pounds. And those stand in stark contrast to just working up, you know, to singles, doubles, and triples. I'll give you an example. My last singles workout, my total tonnage for that workout was 2,390 pounds. My very first loading pattern workout 5 days later was 12,600 pounds. So it is a big adjustment, but it's also part of why they work so well, these loading patterns. So why the switch then from linear periodization to these loading patterns, undulating periodization? Simple. Linear periodization only works for so long. You know, simply adding 5 to 10 pounds a week looks great on paper. In a year or two, you know, you'll be squatting 1,000 pounds, just ridiculous numbers. Oh, how I wish it worked like that. But the loading patterns increase your one rep max anywhere from 5 to 10%. And that might not sound like much, but as an example, right, I'll be embarking on the German loading pattern one. That adds 5% in 6 workouts. That means it's going to bring my 405 squat to 425, which is certainly no world record, but for a guy, you know, coming back from a previously really bad back, 47 years old, not too shabby. Now, you want to go ahead and accomplish this goal too. I would tell you that when I started back on this journey, I had a major, major advantage. And that advantage was this. In my youth, in my 20s, I had squatted well over 500 pounds in competition. I had achieved a body weight of 252 pounds using nothing but creatine. That's what made it possible to start off at a reasonably heavy level and progress up to 400 pounds, at which point I'll go to 500. The last thing I want to tell you, and I would encourage you to do the same, and I built that kind of strength, by the way, on things like 20 rep breathing squats and otherwise following powerlifting-based percentage programs. Finally, I want to address the question of why the box squat. Couple of different reasons. First, if you can move 500 pounds from a dead stop, you should sit and pause on the box before coming back up. Then squatting without the box is a snap. Anyone who's trained off of a box for more than a month knows that when you go back to free squatting without the box, it is like someone put a rocket underneath you. Your sticking point will no longer be in the hole. That's where it is for most people, right? They can't get out of the hole. You have so much strength out of the hole. Your new sticking point, it will likely be in the middle of the lift. And that is remedied by very diligent, heavy ab work and, frankly, speed squats, bar speed, at which point you will be about as strong in that lift as you will ever be. So give some of those ideas a shot, Derek. I know you will be pleased. But the big thing I want to get across here is when you're going for a true new one rep max, don't leave anything to, you know, guesswork. These loading patterns, they tell you exactly how much weight to use for how many sets and how many reps. The only thing you need to figure out is your training frequency, which brings us back to recovery. So it's a great question. It's a great goal. I wish you luck.
Jeff Clifton just posted on Facebook, do you ever plan to market Synthogen as a mix? I'm not sure what he means by that. Do you?
He might mean a powder. Pardon?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. So let me just first say that I wanted to do a powder first, but when you are dealing with fairly high amounts of the essential amino acids, there is only one word to describe it: bitter. Bitter as hell.
Yeah, they don't taste good.
They don't,
It's really hard to mask that flavor without using a bunch of artificial flavors and artificial sweeteners and all the stuff you don't want in your supplements.
Right, and on top of that, I had Rapponticum carthamoids extract and other goodies in there, which don't exactly lend themselves well to dessert-like taste. So I wanted to, but in the final analysis, it had to be encapsulated.
It looks like, are you still there, Rob? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
By the way, I just got to mention something real quick. The reason I'm wearing a red Con 1 shirt today for the show is that I spoke to Aaron Singerman this morning. He's coming back to be a sponsor on Superhuman Radio. So if you're a fan of red Con 1, reach out to Aaron and let him know that you're happy that he is supporting Superhuman Radio again. So there you go.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad. Okay, so the next question comes from Mike Caravaggi. Okay. I like your emphasis on training. What I'd like to know is, what are the best ab exercises? I know diet lets you see your abs, but what are the best movements to strengthen the abs? Good question.
Yeah, so of all the muscle groups that seems to fascinate the public, it's the abs, right?
Yeah.
Now, why that is, I'm not certain. It's not like they're on display for the world to see every day, like, say, your neck or your forearms. But they do fascinate people nonetheless. To that end, here are a couple pointers that I've learned on abs. First, you're absolutely right that if you want to see your abs, diet is the key. In fact, the old saying, abs are made in the kitchen, is very true, in my opinion. Low levels of body fat are absolutely necessary, on the order of certainly under 10%, and I think really 6% if you want to see sharp abs. But I tend to focus on the non-aesthetic reasons for training the abs, meaning I just focus on making them stronger. You know, you can have brutally strong abs and appear obese, believe it or not. Anybody that remembers the former Soviet strongman, Vasily Alexeev, used to open on Wide World of Sports all the time. I loved watching it. Just looking at him, he looked like he walked out of a bar. Big round gut, but what lay underneath were some of the strongest abs on the planet. And more often than not, Alexeev won his weightlifting meets on his first attempt. That was his first attempt. He won the meet. Second attempt, he set a new world record. Third attempt, he broke that world record. It's probably the shortest standing world records ever recorded. He could have never have done that, though, if he hadn't had obscenely strong abs. So how do you get abs like that? Honestly, I think it boils down to two movements, hanging leg raises and weighted planks. Forget crunches, even sit-ups, and certainly those ridiculous ab gadgets that are on late night TV. You know, hanging leg raises and weighted planks blow them out of the water. For the hanging leg raise, you want to hang from a chin-up bar, keep your feet together and perfectly straight, legs perfectly straight, and raise them to parallel. Pause for a second and then lower them, let's call it three quarters of the way. This is very important. Don't let them hang straight down. Just come down three quarters of the way, keeping tension on your abs, and then raise them to perform another rep. Don't let, you know, when you let the legs hang straight down, the tension comes off the abs.
Well, and that's where people swing their legs at the bottom, so they're really not lifting them the second time up.
Yes, that's the other problem. You know, novices will swing like a you know, leaf in the wind.
Right.
This points to, you know, you really need strength in many different areas. Like, for example, your hip flexors, not just your abs.
Now, that swing may not be a bad idea if you're trying to decompress your lumbar spine, just saying. But it's not activating ab muscles the way you think it is.
Right, right. So by the time you can perform just two sets of 20 reps in the hanging leg raise, you will have stronger abs than 95% of the people in your gym. Now, if you want to get them even stronger, place a light dumbbell between your feet and then perform them right in the same fashion. Start with just 5 pounds or the lightest you can find and build up. Because the fulcrum is so far away from your body, the resistance is really magnified. So shoot for just 5 reps at first, building up to 10. Keep increasing the weight, 5 pounds, until you can get to 20 pounds for 10. Once you're spent there, release the dumbbell and continue on using no weight. I absolutely guarantee you will feel this in your abs more so than any other movement. Weighted planks are another time-honored favorite. Now, I favor holding the push-up position versus resting on your elbows. But, you know, if you can't do that yet, start with the elbows first and then hold them for 1 minute in that position. Once you can achieve that, have someone place a weight on your back and shoot for a maximum 10-second hold. Once you're out of the realm of, let's call it 45-pound plates, you will have to get creative. One of the things I do with my clients is I use a milk crate, you know, and I place, let's call it a 50-pound or heavier dumbbell in there, and then have a spotter, you know, I put it right on their back. So those two movements work progressively over time, will give you insanely strong abs, the kind necessary for 500 pound plus squats and deadlifts. They're also great insurance against lower back injuries. It'll help your body conduct force in all of your lifts, especially if you're doing a lot of body weight stuff. So those are my favorite two.
Mike Demers says, what's your take on muscle confusion principle? The one that says you need to switch things up every so often to make muscles grow.
You know, whenever I hear this, it makes me laugh because muscles don't have brains. They're not thinking about what you're doing. You can no more confuse a muscle than you can confuse a plate of spaghetti. You know, being confused beyond that, being confused doesn't cause muscle growth. Overload does. So let's take a look at why some people fall into this trap, though. Performing the same exercises in the same order on the same day of the week certainly does lead to staleness. And the thinking is that if you just switch exercises, reorder them, superset them, etc., the muscles will start growing again. Except they won't. Your mind will get a break. But that's not really growing either. The stark reality of the situation is that consistent workouts on big compound lifts are the fulcrum of your success. So long as you can perform more reps and or add more weight every session. A young kid in the gym, he recently saw me. I was leverage squatting 900 pounds. And again, look, this is no world record, but in this kid's eyes, it was really something. And he asked me how I managed to lift so much weight. And I answered him honestly. I said, 5 to 10 pounds at a time. You see, lots and lots of little increases really do begin to add up, right? In 10 weeks' time of adding just 5 pounds to a lift, you're lifting 50 pounds more. Another 10 weeks, and you're lifting 100 pounds more. But slack off, miss workouts, change movements, perform suboptimally because you got 2 hours of sleep last night, and all bets are off. It doesn't happen. You'll never get to the 900-pound squat. In fact, I very rarely change the exercise menu or even the order that I perform them in. What I do change is my training frequency based upon how I feel I've recovered. You know, all of my workouts and movements have been carefully selected and arranged such that I can increase the weight or the reps. And it is that kind of knuckling down day in and day out, adding 5 pounds that builds big lifts. And big lifts build big muscles, not confusing your muscles. The one variable I do think you need to change frequently, or at least fairly frequently when you're advanced, is the rep range you're working in. So you should have weeks where you shoot for your best, let's call it your best set of 7 reps, your best set of 5 reps, and your best set of 3 reps. And that, because of all the variables your body that adapts to in the gym, it is reps that it adapts to the quickest, right? Also, you'll note that I recommend going as low as 3 reps. And that's important because it is then relatively easy to extrapolate your 1 rep max off of that number. So generally speaking, if you're working in a big lift and you can count on about 10 pounds of push or pull. So for example, a 300 pound squat for 5 reps, his 1 rep max, that person's 1 rep max is gonna be around 350, give or take a few, but it's going to be around 350. Triples also keep your central nervous system in touch with the heavier weights and one rep max attempts, right? If you're moving into loading pattern work that I discussed. So give that a shot, Mike. I think you're going to find you grow a lot easier.
So Khalid Han says, you have to listen to your body. But you hear that feedback? It's happening again. It happened yesterday, too. But the reality is that many of us can't listen to our body. And the reason we can is because our body is what gets us in trouble. Our body is what causes us to injure ourselves quite often.
Yeah.
So but now, don't you think that when we talk about muscle confusion, what they're really talking about was a dumbed down discussion on periodization? I mean, when Joe Weider introduced muscle confusion, and now everybody else has kind of picked it up and gone with it, what he was really talking about was periodized training. Isn't that a periodized training is a good thing, right?
Yes. Periodizing your training makes all the sense in the world. The only
as you point out, the rep ranges, the time in between rest, all those things are variables that should be periodized for different goals, right?
Right. So the one thing that I want to caution against is change just for the sake of change.
Yes.
You know, if a leverage squat is treating you well and you're reliably adding 5 pounds a week, just because you're bored, you want to go over to the leg press and then give up, you know, the next 10 weeks of training, adding 50 or 100 more pounds, it doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, periodization, I think you're right. The only problem with that is when you ask most guys how they periodize their training, they'll look at you with a real long stare.
Yeah, because they're not sure. They do it by how they feel that morning, which is what Khalid is talking about, and that's not the way to train.
Yeah.
John Bassey says, I'm really underweight and can't seem to put on any real muscle. I know diet is important, but what's the best type of creatine for my goals? By the way, I'm 19 years old and still relatively new at training.
You know, if there's one person that understands this, it's me. So, yeah, I've got a lot of suggestions. Everything from your exercise selection to the rep range, like I just discussed, I can help out with that too. But before I get there, though, I need to get to this issue of creatine and why it's important that you don't start using that out of the gate. I think it's fair to say at this point, listen, the benefits of creatine are well known. Even the general public is familiar with it and knows of its benefits. It's everywhere. It's everywhere from GNC to Walmart. Certain sports nutrition companies will hype the hell out of it to the point where they promise drug-like results from their products. And if you flip open any bodybuilding magazine or you visit any online forum, you'll find creatine wars being fought by these rival companies and manufacturers. They will cite study after study to support their argument, and often it boils down to the different types of creatine. You'll see people ruining friendships over creatine mono versus crealkaline, not realizing that crealkaline is creatine monohydrate. There's effervescent creatine. There's creatine plus dextrose. You know, the danger here is this. I know more than a few people that spend days or even months or more studying creatine and what form is best and how much to take and what to take it with, et cetera, et cetera. Let me be clear. This is majoring in the minors. All of that mental anguish, brain damage is at the expense of adding 5 more pounds to your exercise in the gym. The fundamentals in this game are not creatine, glutamine, and a high protein diet. You know, they're training, diet, and rest. So training, diet, and rest. If you're not otherwise achieving your goals, it is almost 100% certainty that you will find the answer in one of those three fundamentals. There's something wrong in one of those three fundamentals. Frankly, the upper end of what creatine will give you is about 10 pounds. And that's in an athlete that already has a lot of muscle. But 10 pounds is chump change compared to the 30 to 50 or more a drug-free trainee can put on with diligent training, a solid diet, and 8 to 10 hours of rest. In fact, I advise my trainees not to even think about creatine until they put on their first 15 to 20 pounds of muscle mass. And just as importantly, work towards the following goal: a 300 bench press, a 400 squat, a 500 deadlift. Think about that logically for a minute. What does creatine do? Initially, and this is where the weight gains come in, it sits in the middle of the muscle cell attracting water. And rough weight gains are, you're going to put on about 3%. So a 200-pound person can expect around 6 pounds tops. In the best case scenario, I've seen 10 pounds in as many days. And yeah, that's impressive, but you know, it's not likely, frankly. And when it's done, it's done. Once your muscles are saturated, you're not getting them to hold any more creatine. The point here is this: who's going to gain more from creatine? The guy who saturates 130 pounds of muscle tissue, or the guy who saturates 200 pounds of muscle tissue? I think the answer is obvious. I would forget creatine, and instead, I would strive to hit those benchmark numbers that I gave for the bench, the squat, and the deadlift. If they're not coming, you need to reassess your progression, your training, your diet, and your rest and your sleep. There is no supplement that's going to put 20 plus pounds of new muscle on your frame. Food will, though. So, you know, so make friends with the silverware.
That's right.
Get your sleep and train hard. And everything from there should fall into place.
And you know what? The truth of the matter is we all love supplements because we all want to do something that we feel like is going to give us an edge. But the reality is that 90% of this is training, eating, and sleeping.
Yeah.
If and not, people don't want to believe that. They just don't want to believe that.
No, and it's consistency in doing those things too, and that's where the rubber meets the road.
Stephen Stewart says, longtime listener, first time asking a question. How difficult did you find it to put on muscle when you were in your teens and 20s? What made the biggest difference for you? I'm a naturally skinny guy, and I like you and looking for answers. Oh, I'm a naturally skinny guy like you and looking for answers. Sorry about that.
Yeah. You know, the short answer to your question is this. It was incredibly difficult for me to put on weight in my teens and even in my 20s. And to really grasp the dilemma I was in, I need to paint a picture for you. And that picture would be 6 feet tall and a 143 with no clue on how to put on muscle, or for that matter, any weight at all. So, you know, looking back at what I was doing, though, it's no wonder why. I mean, my fundamentals were about as screwed up as you could get them. So I'm 15, and I hit the trifecta. My training, diet, and rest habits were atrocious. I mean, absolutely awful. I was training on universal machines and not free weights. I had no concept of overload or how to stimulate growth. My diet went like this in high school. Let's see. I skipped breakfast. I blew my lunch money on candy or ice cream. And then I came home and ate a sensible dinner, you know, whatever mom was making. I guess I slept okay, but that was youth more than anything else. You know, it's not like I prioritized it. Then I went to college. And as I moved into the dorms, I plastered pictures of all my heroes up on the walls. Most of them were just enormous pro wrestlers, right? 300 pounds. Gigantic. And this was the late 80s when they were that big. And I was a whopping 160 at this point. I can still remember this. My roommate, who I had not met yet, he was late moving in, and he got there while I was away for the weekend. He later told me how, because of all the pictures I had up, he like lived in fear of what was coming back. And then I overheard him laughing, telling one of his friends how relieved he was because I was a quote-unquote skinny kid. Looked like a human Q-tip. He was real good with the put-downs. From that point on, I was on a mission, just like you need to be on a mission. Everything I did, every spare second I had, was devoted to learning how to get big. And fortunately for me, fate intervened. I got to the college gym. It wasn't much of anything, but it was all free weights. So I started lifting free weights. I was also on the meal plan. So for the first time in my life, I was eating 3 square meals a day. And then most importantly, I was befriended by someone who knew what the hell he was doing. And I started growing. Inside of a year, I hit 180. I did everything Eddie told me, and it was working. He was a former power lifter. He changed my entire mindset. You know, big basic exercises only, and a lot of food, and a truckload of determination, and a sole mission to get stronger. So I also read voraciously, and this is going to be key for you. I ordered every course I could get my hands on, you know, proposing that it was going to tell me how to get bigger. Two programs literally, these changed my life. One was called Super Big in 6 Weeks. I have not seen that program since. The other one was Super Squats by Randall J. Strawson. Super Big in 6 Weeks, yeah, okay. They both have a headline to sell. But they also really helped me nail down, for the first time, a 6 meals per day diet, with the proviso that not all of it had to be clean. By the way, you're not going to get 20 times your body weight in calories, and it's all going to be completely clean. Super squats to this day was the hardest work I've ever done. And I washed all that hard work down with a gallon of milk a day. And the result was I cracked the 200-pound mark in no time. Okay. I hit a 525 squat, 320 bench, and 525 deadlift. That was my first meet. Now, those are far from world record poundages, but they gave me a solid foundation insofar as size and strength. And you'll notice I achieved the 300-pound bench, 400 squat, 500 deadlift threshold. Eddie encouraged me to take that further into the powerlifting stage. And I won my share of contests and have my share of trophies. But along with the company that I kept, everyone was a strength athlete. It kind of solidified my new identity. It was everything that I wanted to be and everything I had worked so hard for. And it still is. You too would be very wise to surround yourself with people that are stronger than you and people that are fascinated with getting even stronger still. And as I've said many, many times, the biggest breakthroughs for me were not supplements. It was information. The same is going to be true for you. You might get that from a mentor in your life. There's a lot of it on the internet. There's also a lot of god-awful stuff on the internet. But the information that you invest in will come back to you 5 or 10-fold. So I'll leave you to ponder that now, because if you're really serious about achieving your goals, you will act on it. You will seek out greater information.
And Khalid Ha, again, listening to the show live from Algeria, seems to be the only guy that's asking questions besides Jeff Clifton. You know, anybody could ask questions live. We'll put them up too.
Yeah.
He says a lot of people ask, what do you do when you're on a budget and you're tall and skinny? Obviously, the budget thing isn't really that big of a deal when you're willing to eat whatever you have to eat. The budget thing becomes a problem with people who want to make gourmet food and train and build muscle, and they want everything to taste a certain way. You know, tuna fish is very inexpensive, very, very high in protein. The average can is 33 grams of protein. Eggs are relatively cheap and super anabolic.
Yeah.
I mean, if you didn't care about how food tasted, you could eat vegetables and eggs for every meal and build mad muscle and do it on a budget. Because, you know, a dozen eggs in most places today, unless California, California is probably the only place that this isn't true, but a dozen eggs can be had for $2 in most places, $1.99 for a dozen eggs. Yep. That's two meals. That's a dollar a meal.
Yep. And one final word on that. You know, you're on a budget. I don't recommend this, but I've said it before and I'll say it again. When I calculated I needed 6,000 calories a day on the anabolic diet during the week, I went out and I drank 2 cups of vegetable oil a day.
Yeah, and I, obviously you're not – I could see people drinking olive oil, but yeah, not necessarily corn oil. Let's just get that out there right now.
Yeah, I did not make the best choice, but the fact is I did it. And I did it until I got to where I wanted to be, which was 252.
Yeah, and you know, you could do that with coconut oil. It's a better choice. But here's another thing. So when I was a fat bastard – one of the favorite things I loved to eat was Wendy's hamburgers. I used to go in. They had a double stack cheeseburger with two patties with cheese for 99 cents. And I would get three of those, put them on one bun. And then I'd have a Biggie's fries and a diet Mr. Pibb, by the way, because I didn't want the sugar. I was okay being a fat ass on food. Just I didn't want the soda part. Well, the other day, I was famished. I was hungry, and I was running from place to place, and I had to eat. I hadn't eaten enough, and I've been training again very hard, and I don't want to become overtrained, so I'm trying to work hard to get my calories, and I drove past the Wendy's, and I thought, you know what? I drove into Wendy's, and I ordered the Big Dave's Triple, which is basically a three-quarter-pound cheeseburger, three-quarter-pound burgers with cheese in between each, and I just said, give it to me without the bun, just wrap it in the lettuce, and I ate it. Now, what's wrong with that? Now, obviously, that wasn't the cheapest meal in the world. It was like $5 and change, but that was 3/4 of a pound of beef and cheese. That had to be 75 or 80 grams of protein. No. So you can do it. You can definitely do it on a budget, but you got to break with this notion that it's got to be, you know, flank steak and stuff. You just can't do it that way if you're on a budget.
Yeah, it's very simple. Fats are 9 calories per gram. Carbs and protein, 4. You know, if you need the calories, that's where to go.
And that's what I used to do. When I was trying to put on weight, which I do very easily, thank God, I would just do shots of olive oil to fill in my fat.
Yep.
But don't do too much too fast, or you spend a lot of time in the bathroom.
Yes, you will.
Yeah. Ian Musgrove says, hey, Coach Rob, hope this message finds you well. Catching up on SHR this week and heard the episode dedicated to your late dog. I was really sad to hear about that and hope the one you have left is coping better since the loss. Hope you all are doing better as well. I have an old guy myself, and beyond his crippling arthritis, his look and mind are years younger than his movement suggests, which has got me to wondering, is there a peptide or blend of peptides that would help with arthritis? Lord knows your tips on tendonitis were lifesavers, and I figured if anyone knew the answer to this question, it would be you. Thanks again for all of your wisdom. Ian, the dog dude.
Well, first things first, I appreciate those comments. Really, I live for stuff like that. It's why we do the show. Now, with respect to arthritis, not many people know it, but arthritis is not a single disease. It's an informal way of just, I guess, referring to joint or joint pain or joint disease. It turns out there are more than 100 different types, and people of all ages, sexes, and races have arthritis. And here's something I didn't know, despite the fact I was in insurance and disability. Arthritis is the leading cause of disability in America. More than 50 million adults and 300,000 children have some sort of arthritis. It is most common in women, and it occurs more frequently as people get older. But, you know, that's youth is no magic shield from this stuff. So common symptoms, you're going to get swelling, you're going to get pain, you're going to get stiffness, decreased range of motion. And sometimes, you know, they aren't necessarily always there. Symptoms might come and go. They can be mild, moderate, or severe. They may stay the same way for years, but most of the time it progresses and gets worse over time. Severe arthritis is chronic pain. I actually feel fortunate it's in my elbow. Why? Because it's not a weight-bearing joint. You know, unless I go to do a push-up or a dumbbell press, it doesn't hurt me. Arthritis in the knees, that's another issue. Interestingly, there are other types of arthritis that affect the heart, eyes, lungs, kidneys, and skin. I was really shocked to find that out. Anyway, that's the bad news, okay? Here's the good news. You can do something about it, more than most people know, I think. Understanding that most arthritis is some sort of cartilage wear and tear, your first stop in this, I think, should be a solid glucosamine chondroitin product. And those two items, but in particular glucosamine, has been shown to do a couple things. One, it inhibits the breakdown of existing cartilage. And two, this is the exciting part, it's actually been shown to grow new cartilage, and you can see it on the x-rays. The key seems to be getting enough of a bioavailable form of it. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, in researching products, that's where GLC 2000, you know, shined for me. And in that product, you get a whopping 3.5 grams per scoop, along with vitamin C, and it's a powder. So, you know, I take enough pills already. I don't need to take 5 or 10 more of glucosamine chondroitin. And I would imagine the powder is going to assimilate better anyway. It does seem, based upon every user review that I've seen, but more importantly, discussions with people I trust, GLC 2000 really seems to excel where tablets don't. I would imagine that goes back to their binders, fillers, and glues. And for the amount of product that you get, it's a great buy too. Now, you also want to be looking into collagen. We've discussed collagen before. It's the major structural protein in connective tissue. And it turns out it's the most abundant protein in the human body. It's also, if I'm not mistaken, been shown to accelerate muscle growth. So a lot of reasons to be using this stuff. Boswellia serrata is another excellent analgesic herb. Cesus, you've heard me talk many times about Cesus on this program, Cesus quadrangularis, and MSM, which is, if I'm not mistaken, the orally active form of DMSO. All of those I would recommend for arthritis. Needless to say, BPC 157, I think either alone or in combination with TB500, thymosin beta 4, those are must-tries. And if I say so myself, Synthogen has a stellar track record insofar as helping people with injuries. I have a woman IFBB pro that I'm friends with that just raves about growth hormone plus Synthogen. And at first I thought she was joking. You know, I thought like, okay, the growth hormone doesn't 100% of the work there. And she says, no. She said, when I add Synthogen, it makes a major, major difference. So obviously growth hormone, your over-the-counter alternative there are things like GRF-129, with or without DAC, the drug affinity complex, and a GH-releasing peptide like GHERP2, 6, ipamorelin or hexarelin. There's one caveat, though, on hexarelin that you should be aware of. It seems to lose about 75% of its punch as the weeks go by. At about the one-month mark, you're not getting nearly as much horsepower out of it as you were. So accordingly, I would recommend you use it let's call it for 2 weeks before switching to another GHRP, growth hormone releasing peptide. Ipamorelin doesn't cause the hunger, for example, that GHRP 2 and 6 does. You may find that either, you know, a bad thing or a good thing, depending upon what your goals are. But I do find Ipamorelin the most flexible GHRP of the bunch. So, and Carl, I know you recommended a collagen product last time.
Yeah, there's the product that I use is made by Great Lakes, and it's a collagen hydrolysate.
Yep.
Hydrolysate, I'm sorry. And one of the things I found out about them is they test for glyphosate, and they have no glyphosate. They test for it. There's no glyphosate detectable in their collagen product. And why is that important? Because what we learned about glyphosate is it's a synthetic form of glycine, and it's incorporated into tissue, but the body can't really manage it once it's incorporated into tissue. So you don't want glyphosate incorporated into your tissue. So you don't want to take a product that's 40% glycine by weight if that glycine is actually glyphosate.
Yeah.
So Great Lakes tests for glyphosate, and there's no glyphosate in their product.
Yeah.
Another comment from Khalid is about TB500, which is thymosin beta 4. But really, thymosin beta 4 does not affect arthritis. It doesn't. And arthritis is a disease of inflammation. So if you carry a lot of body fat, you're producing a lot of inflammatory cytokines that are causing your arthritis. Yeah. So another thing you can do to eliminate your arthritis is lose body fat. Not because of the mechanical loading of joints, because we see people who are obese and they have arthritis in their neck, and there's no extra loading on the neck. They have arthritis in their hands. Sure, they have arthritis in their knees, and they think, oh, it's because I'm overweight. No, it's because your body fat is manufacturing pro-inflammatory things that are eating up the cartilage in your knees. Yeah. And in your cervical spine, and in your hands. So if you really want to get your arthritis under control, lose body fat. Body fat. That will help a lot.
I'll tell you what. I need to step away for just 1 minute. Can you talk about Actistatin as it compares to GLC 2000?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So Sean Medir and his dad, who is a physician, they are the ones who created GLC 2000. And GLC 2000 is also sold to the professional racehorse industry because they give it to horses to keep their joints healthy. Number one reason that a horse can't race is when their knees start to fill up with fluid, which is from running too much or training too hard or damaging the synovial joint, synovial capsule, I'm sorry. So when they created GLC 2000 for the equine industry, they also found out that it worked for humans, and they have a patent on that, the human version as well. Well, what they learned was it wasn't just the glucosamine and the chondroitin, which they have like four different forms of glucosamine and four different forms of chondroitin in their GLC. In their GLC Direct. They also found out that other things, as Rob mentioned, vitamin C is critical for collagen production, but not too much, because too much vitamin C actually blunts the beneficial effects to the mitochondrial adaptation process that we look for in training. So it's just about 60 milligrams of vitamin C, which ironically is the exact dose that they talked about in the gelatin / collagen study that we talked about on the show several months ago. And there are other things in Actistatin that are all there synergistically to ramp up rebuilding cartilage. It works so effectively that Tiny Meeker, who tore a pec, you know who Tiny is, Rob?
Yes, heard.
That 1,000-pound bench presser. Okay, Tiny is probably the world's strongest bench presser. Tiny tore a pec. He was told that he was done. Sean Medir got him on a very, very high aggressive dose of Actistatin daily. I think the recommended dose is 3 caps in the morning, 3 caps in the evening, and Tiny was taking 6 caps like 4 times a day. Rehab, obviously, whatever little bit of surgery he had to have, rehab, and then started benching again, and then shortly thereafter went to that big bench press contest in Louisiana and benched like 1,013 pounds.
Oh, wow.
So, and I'll tell you somebody else who believes in Actistatin. There is a famous jockey named Gary Stevens who fell more times than his body could take. He had broken just about every bone in his body at one point in his career. And so he retired, never thought that he could ride again. He learned about Actistatin because he was having pain in his joints walking. He started taking Actistatin, and his results were so remarkable that he flew out to GLC's headquarters in Paris, Kentucky, in Versailles, Kentucky, and met with them and told them that he was actually thinking about getting up on a horse again.
Wow.
And to this day, when he rides in the Kentucky Derby, he rides, you will see on his white pants leg the word Actistatin. People all wonder, what the hell is that? It's the reason he says he's riding again today. So when it comes to glucosamine chondroitin supplements, there is no better product than Actistatin made by GLC Direct in Versailles, Kentucky. And you can find them on the web. Just Google GLC or go to glcdirect.com. That's it. And you'll see their Actistatin product there as well.
Yep.
The last thing that we have to cover today, Coach, is the blueprint tip of the day.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting one. Super supplements. Who's using, and more importantly, what are they actually gaining?
Yeah. So I train at two different gyms, one in Massachusetts, another one in Connecticut. The gym in Mass is a Club Fitness, formerly Gold's, a fair number of serious people there. And certainly some guys on super supplements. Now, I thought it would be interesting just to discuss my observations, given what I'm told who's using what along with what they're getting out of it. And it's a fascinating study. Now, understand I'm taking this on faith. So there's a guy who tells me he supplies half the gym. So I'm taking his word on these things. Now, I've been around the scene for 30 plus years, long enough to know what to look for, although I am very careful not to say, hey, look at that guy. He must be on steroids. You know, why? Because I've been hearing that since I was 19, and I wasn't on them, and I'm therefore aware of the fact that you can do it without them. But be that as it may, the people in my gym who are allegedly on something, they all share some common traits. Here's one of them. They're in there every single day training heavy, day in and day out. That should be clue number one. As a natural athlete, can't really do that. And when I say train heavy, whatever heavy is for you, to do that day in and day out usually takes a little help, especially if you're getting up there in years. Your body needs time to recover, okay? I'm also told that they all favor a base of testosterone, which I suppose should come as no surprise. They're using varying amounts of the stuff, though. I was told anywhere from 300 to 1,000 milligrams a week, you know? And those doses seem like enough to allow them to rapidly recover from session to session. Here's where things kind of diverge, though. A lot of these guys are using at least one oral, mostly D-ball, but a few use stronger drugs like Anadrol 50. And now these guys tend to be the younger, I'll call it 30 and under. They're looking to more aggressively boost their body weight. More mature lifters, age 35 and up, I'll call it, they're using milder stuff, stuff like Deca or Anavar, if they can get their hands on it, probably because they have more aches and pains. And as serious as some of these guys are, most, and this blew my mind, most of them don't bother working their legs. It's almost all upper body. And I see really, you know, I see people very rarely pushing their limits. Even fewer record their training. So it's likely they're not working to create the actual physiological trigger for muscle growth, overload. And hey, when you're on growth drugs, pretty much whatever you do, if you're on enough of them, you're going to grow. You know, I guess it goes with the territory. We know from studies that drug-using athletes that are taking meaningful doses, they gain more muscle than naturals who train hard 3 days a week. You know, think about that for a minute. Let it really sink in. Where are these drug-using athletes? Where are they going to be if and when they need to come off? They're going to be up a creek without a paddle. That's where. It is the diet, though, where most fall down. Because I have yet to ask one of these guys the following question and get a satisfactory answer. How many calories a day are you eating? The fact that they don't have an answer for that is absolute madness, in my opinion. Because if it takes 3,000 calories a day to maintain your weight and 3,600 to gain, where are you going? You know, what are you going to get out of your drug cycle? Not much, you know. You might get some water retention, maybe some muscle hardness, all of which is going to be lost, you know, when you come off. Perhaps that's why many of these guys don't. At best, some of these guys eat a gram of protein per pound of body weight, and then they try to eat enough other stuff. As one of them put it to me. I mean, and that's it. That's the general term. I try to get a pound of protein per pound of body weight and eat a lot. One guy told me he eats half a gallon of ice cream before bed every night. That's how he gets most of his calories. The bottom line is that many of these guys using drugs are leaving a lot on the table. More of them should be training the biggest, strongest muscle groups in their bodies, which is, you know, your legs, glutes, and your back, or at least using one workout a week for those as their quote-unquote anabolic anchor. I call, you know, a heavy leg workout, 20-rep breathing squats, or whatever you want to call it, I call that an anabolic anchor because it drives the rest of their program. You know, they should also be training for strength. And not for some other intangible, like a lot of them tell me they train for a good pump. Okay, you know, there's some research showing the pump can help, but compared to getting stronger, I don't think it holds a candle to it. And finally, for God's sake, you know, take enough calories in. Drugs are not, muscle is not created out of thin air. Your body needs the caloric cement that is necessary to lay down bricks, and all the protein in the world isn't going to help you if you're coming up 600 or more calories per day short on a consistent basis. So train hard, but train smart. And drugs or not, don't leave anything on the table. You know, you will gain in far more meaningful ways, and done right, you will actually outperform some of the people on drugs too. I want you to think about that for a second. You and a drug user, you both require 3,000 calories a day to maintain your current size. You both need 3,600 calories a day to gain. You're getting it. He's not. I would be willing to bet that certainly in the long run, you're going to put a lot more muscle on than the guy that's using drugs and only eating 3,000 calories a day. So
I have to believe that too.
You know, it's food for thought. And that, you know what, that might not be indicative of other gyms and other people, but the common denominator to me seems to be these guys aren't eating enough. They don't even know how much to eat.
Yeah. So I posted the x-ray of my left foot. I went to the surgeon this morning to be evaluated for surgery, and I am going to have surgery, obviously. And it's quite a complex surgery, but he's done lots of them. This guy, this is what he does. He's an orthopedic surgeon. He's not a foot doctor. And so he took a picture of my left foot today. Well, both of my feet, actually. And he couldn't believe. So he said, so when did this happen? He kept thinking it happened a couple months ago. I said, no, it happened in 2016, April of 2016. He asked me like three times. He couldn't believe that I've been living with these dislocated toes. He should only know that I leg press 1,000 pounds every leg session with, I mean, and okay, so I'm a little bit of a jerk. I'm going to tell you why. But Kirkland Morletti says, he looked at the x-ray of my foot and it's crazy. You two guys are troopers with the issues that you are working around. And you know what? Kirkland, you're a young guy, but when you fall in love with this process, you are always working around something. I mean, I'm working around a torn hamstring right now, just the muscle bellies. You know, I didn't detach anything. I'm working around my left foot all the time.
Yeah.
So what's happened when you look at the x-rays, and I was trying to get the x-ray on the screen, but I can't. When you look at the x-rays, which is on the Supreme Radio Network Facebook page, what you need to understand is the two middle toes came out of the socket and they're now on top of the foot. Those bones that they used to be attached to have been pressing down into the sole of my foot. As you could imagine, I stopped wearing five fingers.
Yeah.
But I was wearing five fingers all this time, and I was leg pressing with five fingers and squatting with five fingers and doing heavy, you know, bent over row, and all this load-bearing weight on my feet. Those bones have pushed down into the sole of my foot, and I now have two hematomas, which is not an Indian on Gunsmoke. That's not who hematoma was. I have two hematomas that are blood-filled sacs that have now dried, and the blood is hard like candle wax.
Were you running and doing cardio with this too?
Of course. I couldn't let this stop me. I couldn't let this slow me down. I couldn't allow this to be the I can't train now. And I got to say something about leg training too. So don't let me forget that. But these two hematomas have to be surgically removed now because they're becoming infected. The dried blood in there is becoming infected. He says, how long have you had these wounds on the bottom of your foot? And I said, I think they happened about 3 months ago when I was leg pressing one day in my five fingers, but I don't wear my five fingers anymore, I told him. He goes, do you have fever? I said, no. He goes, so you have no, he says, I can't believe you don't have an infection. He goes, wow, your immune system must really be something. He said, because I would expect you to have an infection right now in your foot.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to say.
Wow. But
the bottom line is, you know, you're always training around something. And I had this discussion with Ron Penna, former CEO of Quest, the founder of Quest Nutrition. Having heart and having will is very valuable, but it also can allow you to put yourself in harm's way more often because you believe that you can, through sheer will and focus, that you can move anything, you can do anything you want. And so when you have heart and when you have will, you have a greater responsibility to back off once in a while. Yeah. Because to speak to what Khalid Ha said earlier, I'm looking for it here, you have to listen to your body. Well, my body tells me to keep going and running, and my foot is falling apart. My body keeps telling me to keep squatting and deadlifting, but my hamstrings are tearing. So you can't listen to your body. You must have a coach that tells you what to do so you don't hurt yourself. This is I really believe in this now. And the second thing I want to point out is, so all I've been doing for legs now is leg extensions and leg curls. So my leg days really aren't hard at all. In fact, I can talk, I can fraternize, I can have fun.
Yep.
Well, my upper body training is through the roof now because the energy that I used to expend in a week in my legs
is
being invested in my upper body. My back is thicker, my lats are wider, my shoulders are rounder.
Yeah. I got the opposite going on. But hey, you know what? It gets back to, it's not what you can't do, it's what you can do.
Yeah.
And that's a big, important point. One final note. I just got a flash text here. Synthogen will be shipping out tomorrow. So everybody that's on the pre-order list, your stuff ships out tomorrow.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah. Now, will you have any left over, or is that going to be it?
Well, he sent me a second text. He said, given the number of pre-orders, it might be a while before we have more. So he's going to try to get with the lab and try to get a second batch. But listen, if you're even close to running out, get a pre-order in today.
Yeah.
They ship out tomorrow. First come, first serve.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Yeah. I think that's it, huh?
That's it.
Well, it was a great show. And, of course, it's commercial-free, but go to the website, superhumanradio.net, and patronize our sponsors whenever possible, right? Because they make the show possible. And Coach Rob is one of our sponsors. So you can find a lot of good stuff there. And also, if you're not on the Superhuman Radio email list, you may want to get on the list, because I'm going to be sending out a special gift on behalf of Coach Rob next week. I'm going to wait till next week to send it out. But if you are not on that list, you'll want to get on that list, because I'm going to give you a gift. The Blueprint Bulletin is the single greatest source of cutting-edge, bleeding-edge information. Bleeding-edge information. And I am going to give away a copy for $1. It's normally $19.95. So if you're not on my mail list, get on there so you could take advantage of that soon. All right, Rob, I'll talk to you later, brother.
Thanks, Carl.
And we will see everybody tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio.